You're listening to Sci-Fi for Chicks on Sci-Fi for Me Radio.
Detective Gordon!
Morning, fellas. What can I help you with?
Yes, Gordon. As usual, wrong place, wrong time. Go. Now.
Why? So these men can kill Carmine Falcone?
I have no knowledge of that. Go. That's an order.
You're a disgrace, Loeb. I hope to see you behind bars very soon. Or dead. Whichever.
Hope. It's for losers, Jim.
He's all yours!
Jim, don't shoot, it's me! We gotta go, there are ambulances in the basement. Where's your man?
About that. We gotta take Penguin and Gilzean too.
Penguin and Gilzean?
I arrested him for attempted murder. They're in my custody.
I don't even want to argue with you. Come on, let's go! Go!
Welcome to Sci-Fi for Chicks as we talk about the Gotham finale, season 1, episode 22, All Happy Families Are Alike, or as we're calling it, Hope is for Losers. I love that line. I have to really admit when Peter Scolari said that line, because Peter Scolari is such a happy little guy and he is so menacing in this. And when he said that, I'm like, that is a title option. And then Alex said, no, that is the title. Hi, my name is Heather, and I'm joined by my podcasting partner in crime, Alex. Hey, Alex.
Hello, everybody.
Are you ready to talk this season finale of Gotham?
I guess. If we have to. Well, yes, we have to, because I want this done and over with. But yes.
We want to finish this up. I'm wondering if we're like the only people in the world that aren't just gushing over every aspect of the show. I guess need to maybe listen to a couple other podcasts that and just get a sample and see, because our alternate title for our alternate title, so the actual title of the episode is All Happy Families Are Alike, we're calling it Hope is for Losers. Our alternate title is Four Rants and a Breather, because there's basically five sections of this episode, and I apologize in advance. Dear listeners who I love, and thank you so much for sticking with us and listening through everything, you are going to get four rants and a breather.
Which also means that the rantpocalypse is back and better than ever. So those of you who got the badges the last time we had a rantpocalypse, well, you're about to earn a second one. For that, I'm both sorry and really not sorry, because, well, I know I say we rant because we care, but sometimes we rant because they really deserve it.
Mm-hmm. Now, I will say, I mean, there are bright spots throughout the entire episode for me. There were these just little shining moments of, ooh, I really like that.
And we will gush about those.
And we will gush, because we know how to gush just as well as we know how to rant. But some of the stuff is just, I mean, I really don't know if it's something that, if you are really into DC, if you really live and breathe Batman and that whole universe, do you see it differently than we are? Is there, I don't know. I feel a disconnect in what I'm expecting and what I think they could do versus what we're getting. Mm. Does that make sense?
Yeah. It does to me. I don't know about our listeners. So, hey, everybody, let us know.
Please do let us know. You can email us sci-fi4chicks@sci-fi4me.com. You can also go over to Twitter and follow us at sci-fi4chicks, and we would love to know what you think on either of those, and also call the hotline 573-427-2434. That's 573-42-SCI-FI. Because I'd really like, if we're missing something, I'd love to know before we have to decide about season 2.
Mm.
which the decision might actually have already been made, but maybe it could change over the summer. Let's go ahead and dive right into it with, I guess maybe after each section we can say, is this the rant or was this the breather? We're going to start with our single scene, which stylistically I have to say was cool. I like the style that it did, although I do have to do, I do have to have a little codicil here. When I was watching this online, the sync of the audio and the video was 5 seconds off. So I don't know if it actually didn't matter as much with this scene, because this particular scene was already so off kilter that this was the one scene that really worked, being able to watch it and listen to it 5 seconds out of sync. Let's go ahead and talk about Mr. Ed Nigma and his little scene there with Miss Kringle. At least we know that Miss K isn't a dumb bunny. She figured out this quote unquote hidden clue.
Yeah.
Nigma. Coinky dink? I think not.
I really like that she did figure it out. And you can tell that she didn't, well, you and everybody else, including Mr. Nigma, can tell that she didn't really buy his explanation of what a weird coincidence, right? Huh, that's interesting. Like, how did that happen? What on earth made
So
him
you know nothing?
Yeah, no, I do not know. I was expecting him to actually, giggle at some point, like he couldn't contain himself. But
Yeah, like a
yeah. But in a way, here's the thing, because I really loved the entire scene. I liked his exchange with Miss Kringle. I liked his little unraveling at the end. I liked that little unstable voices in my head and everything.
You're the guy that likes riddles.
Why are you laughing, you fool? It's not funny.
What a creep.
She'll keep digging.
Why did you have to leave a clue? Why?
Relax. What can she find? What can she prove? Nothing. There's no body. Stop worrying. But she looks so sad and angry. I hate it when she looks at me that way.
Menacing and weird.
Please. Like it matters. Like you stand a chance with her. She knows how you feel about her, and she treats you like dirt.
Treats you like dirt.
I don't care. I still love her.
Oh, listen to yourself. Be a man!
You're an odd man, Mr. Nathan.
You'll do better with that one if she's a little scared of you. Stop talking like that.
No riddles.
Formal complaints about you.
Just keeping it real. What's black and white and red all over?
Stop!
I wouldn't quit your day job if I were you.
He is so weird.
It was, in a way, some might think that it was sudden, that he's sudden, unraveling into crazy town. But at the same time, I just know that when a trauma really hits you, and in a way your first kill might be traumatic, it just
Oh dear.
pulls, yeah, it snaps something inside of you. And so I could totally believe that after killing the guy and then getting rid of the body and, chopping it into pieces might cause poor little Ed to completely go nuts. And the entire scene, I loved it. It was incredible and pushed the Riddler storyline forward by miles. And, that would totally be one of the storylines I would totally be looking forward to in season two. But at the same time, it kind of
I just
felt
want everybody to hear that right there. She's loving and gushing, but
there's a
which
but.
I'll tell you what but means is behold underlying truth. Go ahead, Alex.
But in a way, that.
You thought this was the breather.
Oh no.
Silly listeners.
That incredible, amazing scene, both visually and plot-wise, kind of felt like that one scene with Barbara's parents. It was so completely disconnected from everything. And it was set towards the end of the episode.
Very near the end.
Very near the end. And it was like, was it the last scene?
No, it was the third to last.
Yeah, but it was so completely, like, the episode is wrapping up, so you expect to see all the storylines within the episode to wrap up. Mm-hmm. And suddenly, there's Enigma, you know, going crazy.
Yeah.
It was so completely random that despite the fact that it was absolutely brilliant writing-wise and acting-wise and everything-wise, it threw me out of the episode. Like, completely. I had to go, wait, what am I watching? So, that's an example of an amazing scene that just doesn't fit into the episode. It would work so much better at the very beginning if they had to put it inside this episode at all. It would work better at the beginning, because you have this one random scene and then you go with the gang war or something. You could have a segue from it to a gang war by a completely random cop that says something to Ed or something. I don't know, and I don't care. It was such a brilliant scene, so completely wasted, that in the end, instead of being, oh my god, so excited, my excitement is kind of marred with disappointment, even.
Mm-hmm.
So, there you go, my very first rant.
I really totally agree, because if you take this scene totally out, this is a video on YouTube, and you just watch just this scene, it's a really compelling scene, because watching Corey go for it and be Enigma, but then just that look on his face by the end of the scene was just so super menacing. Here's this guy that's a total goofball face most of the season.
Mm-hmm.
The geeky guy in the corner that you're just like, I didn't want to say you're so cute, because you're just such a little geekball.
Creepy little puppy.
And then at the end, he's just creepy. He's not a little puppy anymore. He's just creepy.
Mm.
It was a really great scene. We have, and the stylized, the way the editing, and it reminded me of two different things. One is another show we're podcasting on, Orphan Black, with the glitching, when we, in a recent episode, saw Seth start glitching and jumping all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
And how you knew everything was making sense in Seth's mind for that split second in time, and then it jumps to something else. That's what was happening with Ed. Everything made complete sense, but then he's jumping over to this track and jumping over here and going everywhere else, and, you know, hearing things like saying how she'll keep digging. You see kind of where he's going. It's like he still loves her. He wants to do this, but she'll keep digging, which means they'll find out and blah, blah, blah. And then just going back and forth, you see the schism. Like you said, the oh dear of killing the cop pushed him to a point where he was on the precipice, and now he realizes, but I'm a good guy working in the cops, but I killed somebody and I love her, but she's going to dig and she's going to find out and da, 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 total, all the glitching. It also reminded me a lot of, like, Norman Bates, when you start having those multiple sides that are battling with each other. And I thought it was a brilliant scene, but you are 100% right. It took me completely out of the story. It had no place where it was. I know why it was where it was placed, because it's wanting to set you up for next season. Hey, by the way, Riddler's going to come out next season. Woohoo, look at this. I didn't need that. It could have been at the end of last week's episode, or at the very beginning of this one, or anywhere else, and it would have made sense. But it really took me completely out of what was going on. I mean, you've just finished with all this Fish and Penguin and Butch stuff, and then you cut to this, and then you cut back to Jim and Falcon, and it doesn't make sense.
Yeah,
anywhere.
You know what I think would be even better? If they took that scene completely out of the episode and then released it as a separate little thing.
Webisode. Webisode thing.
In a month or so.
Oh.
Then I would be like, oh my god, Heather, we are podcasting season 2. There is no way I'm missing this.
That's true. Yeah.
But, and I can bet everything that I have, that you would be, oh my god, you're right. Because that scene, standing on its own, is absolutely brilliant. And I'm just, when I think about just the scene, I'm incredibly excited. But when I put it in context, the whole excitement is poof, gone, because it's so random and so out of place. And when I think about it too long, the excitement changes into frustration. Because, oh my god, why? So, yeah. No. I love you, it was incredible, but no.
Yeah. I think that actually is a good idea, because we see enough stuff in the police station. You could have had Egghead, that's a totally different criminal. You could have had Ed walking through the background, or even bumping into one of the cops, and you could see him like glitching, but not focus on it.
Yeah.
So you see it, and then it would tie into you like the webisode there, maybe, or you see Miss Kringle leaving Ed or something, something in the background, so that you know when it happened. But here's our little teaser for season two. Is this webisode, this little extra glitch, thing that you can see. It didn't make sense in the space of this episode, and it didn't add to this episode. Mm-hmm. It detracted from the episode. And when this is a finale,
yeah,
you should not be detracting from the point of your finale.
And
a
completely random thought, because that's just came to me. It didn't even fit into the episode visually, because everything else was in blues. Mm-mm. And this one thing was in green. That I can understand why, green, Riddler, haha, see what we did there. Yes, I do, but it messes everything up even more. So, congrats. And can you hear my sarcasm?
That's why Riddler chose green, because he's stuck under the fluorescent lights.
Probably.
Never thought of that. Maybe, it could be. So, yeah, it just upsets me when I see something that has this much potential not handled right. Like you, I think you hit the nail on the head with, if this scene were somewhere else, if it were handled differently, it was a great scene. And you brought up that scene with Barbara and her parents.
Mm.
And we have that scene in the last episode with Barbara and her parents and Jason. And it reminded me of that, how so much of the ogre stuff really was mishandled scheduling wise. The majority of the rant that I had about the ogre storyline was really about how it was all smashed together in this continuing episode arc. Yeah. Whereas if we had had it throughout the season, if this episode really made me realize too, that if all this ogre stuff had happened earlier, if Babs, when she went off, I mean, wasn't it end of the mid-season?
Yeah.
That we had her going off, and when we first came back, we see that she's going back to her parents. If that ogre stuff, if she had been captured much earlier, I think it would have made the next block much more compelling. Let's talk about Barbara and Lee for a second, because, well, first off, why is Lee the medical examiner, the coroner, the one that's checking Barbara out and making sure she's physically okay after this trauma, and now being her counselor? We know why Barb wants her to be the counselor, but why is an ME doing this?
It makes no sense whatsoever. I could understand if Lee was checking out or fixing and patching up Jim or even Harvey. Because, they don't want the hassle of a hospital, right? It happened on other procedurals that I've seen. When a team of investigators have a close relationship with the ME, they will go to the ME instead of the hospital, unless they are literally dying to, stitch up a bullet wound or fix something, like, totally minor. It's just a flesh wound. And I can understand that, and yeah, I can buy it even. But to have Barbara in the morgue, because that's where I assume they've been, going for checkups to the morgue. Well, Lee's decision to go from a doctor in a female ward of Arkham to become the coroner was already kind of stretching it a little bit. And now...
It felt very much like, I'm doing this so I can be closer to Jim because I've got a crush on him.
Yeah, well, it's not unheard convenient. Of for women to do stupid stuff just to top that. So yeah. I was willing to buy it because I enjoy Morena Baccarin. Yeah, okay.
Oh, I love her.
But watching Barbara on a, having a checkup in the morgue, so completely out of the blue and so completely randomly, because at no point in time can I envision them even meeting. Because if you go with logic, as, you know, I assume some writers would, if they don't write for Gotham, apparently, you have Barbara on the crime scene, you know? Her parents are dead, Jason is dead, and Jim is, you know, there to save her. Oh my god, you're a hero and all that. The first thing...
And this is upstate. Yeah. Remember that that murder happened upstate, in another city, in another district
upstate.
That probably has police
so
as well.
So she would go with paramedics to a hospital near the crime scene. Or to a hospital that handles, that has an ER and handles that sort of stuff. Right? And that would still be upstate. Once she was released from immediate care, she would be able to go home, but she would have a scheduled checkup to with somebody, probably somebody who works also at a hospital, for God's sake, or her family doctor. I don't know how medical care happens in the States, other than poorly, apparently. But she would have a scheduled checkup, and her medical records would be transferred to that, to said doctor that would have a practice of handling alive patients. And can we say it again? Alive patients.
Yeah.
And at no point in time is she meeting Lee, because Lee isn't a practicing doctor. She has a medical license, yes, but she's a coroner. She doesn't have a practice set up. She doesn't have this flow, a way to receive those records. Those confidential medical records. How is...
Even that crime scene, that wouldn't be her jurisdiction as an ME to do the crime scene upstate.
Yeah. Unless, of course, for some random reason, becoming a coroner in Gotham also made her the medical examiner of the entire state.
Yeah. What a promotion. Yay.
Yeah. From a part-time doctor at the women's ward in a prison to medical examiner of the whole state. My willingness to suspend my disbelief is kind of, you know, disappearing, like, immediately. No. I'm not.
Well, and
it.
The fact that... Okay, so let's say for some reason Babs does feel this female kinship with Lee. Maybe her every other doctor in Gotham is a man, and she just feels like, I can only talk to Lee. Because I wrote down, Babs doesn't know that Lee and Jim are dating? Okay. Let's say Barbara didn't know, which we find out later is not the case. But let's say Barbara doesn't know that Lee and Jim are dating. Lee knows. And I'm like, you are in the medical profession. You have an actual doctor's degree. Yes, you are an ME now dealing with this. But there's a certain thing with the whole oath and Hippocratic Oath and all these various things that go on with being a doctor. You know you have a personal relationship with her ex. Why are you counseling her? Why would you agree to it? That guilty look on her face, it felt very much like, well, you know, women can be guilted into anything. They feel bad, and that's why they do it. It didn't make sense to me that Lee's character should agree so readily to counsel this woman. It's not like they were friends before. Hey, let's talk like friends. Like, it didn't have... Going to another show that we talk about occasionally with this, on Elementary, when we have, what's his sponsor's name? Sherlock sponsor's name?
Alfredo.
Alfredo, that's right. It's not even like they have an Alfredo-Sherlock relationship that now has crossed over into friends.
Yeah.
And, I mean, did you notice on Elementary, when Sherlock does say, no, we're not, I've got a new sponsor because you are my friend. This is Sherlock. And this is, you know, a Narcotics Anonymous sponsor that have now said, this is a conflict of interest. We, if we're going to have a personal relationship, we can't be sponsoree anymore. She is a doctor. I'm just like, that works in the police station. Really? It was just too convenient. We need to get Barbara and Lee together for this final scene. It drove me crazy.
And on top of that, Lee admits in the show to Barbara, with Jim as her witness, that she has some trauma experience, but very little. Which means, I assume,
basically
is
what
a rotation
you have to have.
On psych when
exactly.
she was doing
exactly.
her residency or something. So that's 6 months of internship, of residency, of whatever. That is in no way qualifying her to be any sort of a counsel to anyone. My friend finished 5 years of master degrees in psychology, and she only became an actual crisis counselor after 2 years of internship at a crisis center. Because she wasn't qualified, and she knew it. And people that trained her knew it. And here Lee, with years of experience on the job, is like, okay, yeah, sure, I'll counsel you. How, in what bizarro universe does this make sense?
Bizarro universe. Well, and Jim being complicit in it. He's standing there, and him and Lee are sharing these, oh, this is awkward, and oh, we're in a relationship now, and she doesn't know, and well, let's just humor. Like, that whole dynamic just did not make sense at all. And it continued to not make sense. When we got to, I did like the one when we get to her apartment where Babs is saying, you know, how this is the dream. She's scared that her being safe and everything now that she's going to wake up and she's still going to be with him. That was the moment. I'm going to tell you the one moment in the whole Barbara Lee thing that I really liked, because it didn't feel like I'm talking to my therapist. It felt like I'm talking to my friend, and you're the only one I can share this with. So if they'd had some sort of relationship in the past, even just casual, it would have made more sense. But, you know, kind of just like with that Corey scene, the Ed scene, where on its own, it was good. It didn't make sense there. That one moment of them sitting on the sofa and talking about, this is the dream. I'm scared I'm going to wake up from this. That was the good moment of that, because I did sense her feeling scared that I'll wake up and he's alive and he's coming for me.
Mm.
That was a good moment.
Yes, it was.
Well, it was then ruined for me by the fact that I remembered, but wait, you were only in his control for a day.
Yeah.
And I thought, again, if they had moved that Barbara was captured many episodes ago, it would have made so much more sense that Barbara was, that she was under his control, under his thumb for a really long time. And that after being broken previously, before the show even started, after being sent off kilter by the whole Falcone thing, you know, that we had, was that mid-season,
yeah,
before mid-season? That was before mid-season, yeah. See, I don't even remember anymore. That then being captured by Jason just really pushes her to the brink. I'm like, you were under his thumb for one day. Not that that can't be a lot of stuff, but the way she talked about it, the way she was describing it with the cutaways. Did you like how we didn't actually get to hear anything that actually happened?
Yeah.
Well, here, I'll tell you everything. Let's go to commercial and come back. And then he did this. That's when I woke up. And I'm like, we don't even get to hear anything? I didn't feel that enough had happened to her for the break that we then see come up.
But that's the same problem. It just didn't make sense to me. We're coming back to the same problem we had last week. That it's just not believable that after a day, this strong person we've seen at the beginning of the show just breaks apart and turns into a killer. I love Erin Richards. She's amazing. Yeah. I loved her at the beginning of the show. But, and which means that since I like the actress, I was willing to push myself and try to, you know, enjoy what I'm given in hopes that she's going to get better material. But this comes back for me to the problem that I had last week. I just can't believe it. And it's not, you know, oh my God, I can't believe it. No, I literally can't believe it. I cannot find myself, force myself to believe what I'm being fed, or force-fed in that case, that she's this broken doll who's been completely brainwashed. Because I have to believe that nobody in her right mind, especially not Barbara, would attack Lee. This is a person that's supposed to marry Jim along the line and have, you know, two kids with him.
And have Batgirl, yeah.
Yeah, it's just, what? What is this that I'm seeing?
If she had been broken more, and it's not that I want the character to be broken, but the way she started turning when they were talking, does Jim ever hit you out of passion? I'm like, okay, is this because of what Jason did to you? Because we had the whole S&M thing, obviously, that happened. Again, if she had, you know, this whole Stockholm syndrome, captive syndrome, whatever syndrome, where she was with him for a long time, and that's how Jason showed his passion. I'm like, where is this coming from that you're asking if Jim has ever hit Lee out of passion? Even later, she says, no, he's a good guy. He's one of the good guys. You know, he's how she's sticking up for him. But then she's talking about, did he ever hit you? It's like, okay, is that something Jason did to you? Again, how traumatized are you that, and I'm not saying that it can't happen. Please don't understand that you can only be super traumatized if you're exposed to it after months and months and months and months. But the way they've set this character up, I don't buy that a night of S&M and then a day of torture where she was drugged for most of it pushes her character to this point. I don't buy with how they've written this character. How, you know, she's trying to drag Lee into it, you know, how Lee first denies it and then says, well, yeah, okay, we are, and is asking him, you know, do you love him? Has he told you that he loves you? Have you told him you love him? And you see Barbara turning. You see this, and I'm like, Lee, get the F out of this place. Don't you see that when the way she's asking this, you should not be in her apartment. The whole fact that she said, yes, only you can counsel me and you have to do it in my apartment. Are those not red flags that are popping up everywhere, even with the caution flags of her wanting you to be her therapist when you're not a therapist? All these red flags are flying up, and I'm like, is Lee's character so guilt-ridden over dating Jim after Barbara had broken up with Jim? Why is she even guilt-ridden about this? You know?
Yeah, the question that I kept asking myself, on top of all of the questions that you're asking, was, you worked with convicts, with women and men who's been convicted and weren't really stable mentally to begin with. And there's nothing about this situation that worries you? Like, seriously? Yeah. The first time Lee actually expressed any hesitation or fear was when Barbara put her hand on a knife, which, by the way, it didn't worry you that she had a kitchen knife next to her?
On a dinner table?
On a dinner table. It's, what? What is this?
Yeah.
They basically took two incredibly intelligent and strong female characters and, like, stripped them of everything that was good about them and what I loved about them.
Well, it was, again, we want to get to that cat fight at the end. How do we get there? By making Lee totally oblivious to all the signs that she should have seen from women in a, you know, the psychotic ward of a prison.
Yeah.
She's seen these criminals, female criminals. So, okay, she should have had some sort of insight already. How do we blind her to this? Oh, we'll make her feel guilty for dating Jim, who is the ex of the woman who was traumatized by this serial killer. And we'll have her try and be empathetic and pull all this out of her and find out, oh, well, Jason made you bring up all that, those things about you and your parents.
And what came into your head?
You know, just stupid kid stuff, I guess. Like, my mom used to call me her little piggy when I was little. They threw away my posters. Never nurtured my self-esteem. Just slowly, steadily grinding away at my soul. Trying to make me disappear.
Let's not get stuff.
To be fair to them, they simply never understood me. They have no clue who I am. Even when I was killing them, they just gaped at me like fools. No understanding.
Barbara, Jason Lennon killed your parents. You didn't kill them.
Yes, I did. I stabbed them several times. And then I slit their throats.
I'd like to leave now, please. You're uncomfortable. How about now?
It wasn't you that killed them. It was him. And then her. No, it wasn't. It was me. I don't know. Really? You guys hadn't figured this out from the way she was on the crime scene, that maybe she had something to do with it? And suddenly it's like, how do we get them into this cat fight? And it just was very disappointing. It was very much, I at least had one happy moment in this. This is my, well, other than I like the, this is the dream part. I had my little happy moment when she's in the bathroom and Barbara's breaking through and I thought of Jack Nicholson in The Shining. Mm-hmm. I was waiting for her to say, here's Barbara, because it was, I'm like, okay, at least, a little levity there before we get into the out and out. I think they were trying to up, and this is a major flashback, Crystal and Alexis Carrington from Dynasty, which is like the cat fight to end all cat fights.
Yeah.
I just was very disappointed because everything seemed to, we want to get to the point where these two women are rolling around the floor, beating each other to a pulp, and Jim can walk in and quote unquote save the day after Barbara's been beaten to a pulp. Yeah, let's have that happen. Let's have a woman beat up another woman after. Yeah, it's just, ugh, infuriating.
Okay. Slight side note that's very relevant to what we're talking about, but not actually about the characters.
Mm-hmm.
The writing team on Gotham has 4 women on the team. Megan Morstan Brown wrote 2 episodes. Rebecca Perry Cutter wrote 1 episode. Rebecca Dameron wrote 1 episode. And Sue Chung wrote 1 episode. And all of them are credited also additionally either as a story editor or a producer on the show.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to ask myself, and we have to ask ourselves, at no point in time did those women look at those scripts, and at this script in particular, and said nothing? Like, the majority of this season, I could swear that there were no women on the writing staff. The way everything was handled, you know, when you look on the big picture. Yeah, there were some episodes that had better, you know, written females and some that were really not. But yeah, I have to wonder if with four women on the writing team that have more credits to them, like story editors and being in, on the production team, if that's what we're getting, then either A, those women aren't looking carefully enough at what's leaving the writing room, or they're not loud enough with their objections, or they don't care, or they aren't listened to, because I don't... If the team has four women on it, and this is still what we're given, then I don't even know where the problem is. I don't even have anyone to blame other than the majority of this big mass that consists of writers and powers that be and production team and directors. And what is wrong with you people?
Yeah. It really makes me think that we want to get to this one thing, and however we get there, it doesn't matter. It just matters that we get to this one point. And it's like, it's not the destination, people, it's the journey. And this is not just true in life, it's true in stories too. It's not just where you end up. You don't, the ends don't justify the means. And it really annoys me. And especially ending, and I love Harv. You know I love Harvey Bullock.
Yes.
Donald Logue has really turned this guy into somebody who I care about. And that I like that he's this character that is still very, very much, you know, protecting his own butt and is scared of various things and is still kind of in that corrupt cop mentality, but doesn't want to be. I want to be the good cop. You've shown me the way. I'm turning my ways. I'm still aware of all this. To at the end, have him say the, you know, like, I told you that woman was crazy. I'm like, really? That's how we're going out? With Barbara?
She's crazy?
On the season? This whole season. That's our final thing with Barbara, is I told you that woman was crazy. As she's laying on the ground, having been beaten to a pulp. And I'm thinking, are you guys trying to turn Barbara? Are we really messing with DC Universe? To the best of what I know. Are you guys trying to turn Barbara into the... That was a couple episodes ago. I was saying, you know, that Jada Pinkett Smith leaving,
yeah.
So we won't have Fish. The mature, are we trying to turn Barbara into the mature female bad guy now? The villain? Is that what we're doing? I'm not. I think I even said in that episode, that ain't gonna work.
It's not. It hurts me as a writer to see people taking shortcuts like this, because you know, you've been podcasting with me for a year now, for God's sake, and you know that the one thing that I absolutely hate and can't stand and that will drive me absolutely crazy is lazy writing. And you can tell that this is lazy writing. We want to get from point A to point D, but we're not going to bother with B and C, so we'll just force the character out of the what they would actually do and just, yeah, make them into stick figures to act out what we want to happen. I'm not okay with that.
And it's not saying that Barbara has to be a goody two-shoes.
No, but she has to be consistent.
She can have that dark side. If we really want her to have this foray into the dark side and baddie villain, great. But how you got her there was not good. And what you're doing to Lee is not good. And then putting them together for this purpose is not good at all. Okay, Alex, that's we started with Ed that started kind of happy and moved into a rant. And then we had a great big huge
rant
heavy section.
Ooh, yeah. Oh
yeah. I'm a little tired now. I think I need a breather. So can we talk a little bit about Bruce and Alf, please?
Yes,
Can
we
we
can,
please?
because
Please.
yeah, I need a breather too. I need something cute and amazing and awesome. So Bruce will do. Bruce will do.
Well, Bruce and Alfred.
Bruce
I
and
like
Alfred,
these two together.
yes.
They we have where this is now 2 weeks after the beginning of the episode, but the whole rest of the episode is 2 weeks after, so no big deal. But Bruce is still a little got a little bit of daddy issues there.
Yeah, literally.
Just a little. I like though how even in his, because we did talk about last week about how Bruce is maybe still too caught up in the emotion of being disappointed in his dad. That he's still there, but he's found a way to be in that emotional state, but also think and also find ways to logically work through things. And Alfred is still, I think he's becoming more fatherly in the way he's indulging him, but also watchful over him and okay, well, this isn't taking all these books down off the shelf, you know, tearing this room apart. What really is it going to do? We'll just have to pay somebody a little bit more money to clean up the place after. And actually, it's good. You take all those books down, you can really dust. Really nice. Get the whole place really clean. Because I'm sure with all those books, they haven't been. I like this these scenes because I do like seeing that determination and that he knows it's like his bat senses are starting. He knows that there's something there. Okay, you guys keep saying my dad's a good guy. So if my dad's a good guy, there's a reason for all this. And he starts putting all these things together. His dad would go in that room, lock himself in the room, and play the classical music really loud. Tick tock, tick tock. Try and figure out where everything lands. And we just have a few of those scenes, which again, other than unlike the Ed scenes, we have enough sprinkled because the Bruce stuff has nothing whatsoever to do with
With
this
everything else,
episode.
yeah.
It's just setting us up for next season with exactly what, you know, we predicted
But
last
there's
week that,
enough of
ooh,
him.
he's going to find the bat cave. Yeah.
There's enough of him that you can call it a subplot B or C, a subplot of this episode. Because even though if you take it all out, the main plot will not suffer, it's significant enough and there's enough of it that, yeah, I can buy it as a break between the intense action scenes that
A
happen.
breather.
Yeah, literally a
Yeah, I
breather.
totally buy a breather. It's kind of like on Orphan Black, the Allison scenes. If you took the Allison scenes out of these last few episodes,
Nothing would change, but it's awesome.
nothing would change. The episode would stand, but it is it's welcome. And like I said, we were talking again, I think it was last week, about how David is grown.
Yeah.
He's really becoming a young man, and how it actually fits how Bruce is growing emotionally, not just physically, but how he's becoming a young man
Yeah.
and moving into that. We see that with this because Bruce is saying, you know, I'll know it when I see it. I don't know what I'm looking for, but I know it when I see it. And my intuition is almost always correct. He's finding this confidence in himself and this growing. And we have even just little ways of how this partnership between him and Alfred is really working. When he does the whole none so blind, which then triggers Bruce to remember this and Lucius saying that and how he was stoic, which let's go to Marcus Aurelius and look for it. And we can't find this little remote control. I loved Alfred doing that. Don't press that button. Don't push the button, which made me think of like Doctor Who and like, you know, when I see a big red button, you know what I want to do?
Press
Push
it.
it. It's like, yeah, push that button. Or anybody that has ever seen The Great Race, push the button, Max. That's one. I don't know if you'd like that or not, because it's very American humor. I really did like that moment because it was the little scenes of Bruce throughout this episode did lead us to this final scene, which I love how we're talking about the final scene before we even get to the heart of the episode. But that final scene that is the teaser for next season of him pressing the button, and you have that music, which I believe is from Romeo and Juliet, not the movie.
It did sound familiar.
Marcus Aurelius! Marcus Aurelius!
What about him?
He was a Roman emperor.
Yes, well, I'm fully aware of that, Master Bruce.
And a Stoic. I think I remember he was a Stoic, like my father. Lucius Fox called my father a Stoic.
Lots of people are called Stoic. Basically means hard nut, doesn't say much, doesn't mean it's a bloody clue, does it?
It's a philosophy, Alfred. It's a way of life.
Maybe that as well, I suppose, but...
What is it, do you think?
I don't know, and I don't care, and don't you dare press that bloody button.
Why not?
It could be a bomb.
Alfred, that seems improbable.
Dun, which, yeah, I believe it is from Romeo and Juliet, and the fireplace opens up, and you know, Alfred and Bruce are both like, what? Bob and you look down. Yeah, to the stairs, and you actually hear the bats flying around down there.
Yes, I'm glad it wasn't just me.
I love that. And it actually kind of reminded me of the ending in... You ready for it? Ready for it, mm-hmm. Alex? The little teaser in Lost.
Dum, dum, dum. She did it again.
When they open up the hatch and Locke is looking down, and you just pull back down the hatch shaft, that sets it up for season two, where in Lost you're going down into the hatch and you're discovering that whole world and you meet Desmond. Yay! I'm very happy about that one. That's what it felt like. It's like, okay, we're going down that rabbit hole. Here's a whole new world that's going to open up next season. So I thought it was a perfect way to end the season.
Yes.
Not a cliffhanger, but a door that has literally opened.
The promise. When you can't end something on a cliffhanger to make them, oh my God, what happens next? This is how you end it. This is such a promise of this is what we are going to explore next season. And it's a perfect way, because the whole season one was the Batman show without the Batman. And season two, we know we're still not getting the Batman. But we're getting closer. Like, this tiny little step forward. And all the promises that come with it. Yes. Yes, that's how you do it. And not some random scene that doesn't fit.
It's really weird how they have those. This was really a shining moment, I think.
Yeah.
That it was a super simple thing, and it set it up perfectly. And it fit perfectly in the episode, unlike the Ed scene. The Ed Nygma scene did not fit. But it was a great scene. It didn't fit the episode. This fit the episode, and it was a great scene. And it really, it was the one thing that I went, well, maybe I'll watch it again next season. That's kind of cool.
Like, maybe we'll give it one episode, maybe two episode chance to, you know, get us back.
We'll see.
But that was a promise that, yeah, I can buy that. Let's do this.
And that was a breather. And this is where I'm going to apologize to our listeners, because this is going to be a really long episode. So if after this breather, you want to take a break, pause us and come back and finish the episode as we get to the heart of the matter, because we are quite a bit in.
Go get some chocolate, make some tea, and steel yourself for what's coming. Because, oh yes, baby, it's coming.
Or a little tequila or something. We totally just pause, just press pause, and then come back to us.
Hi, this is Jason Hunt, and if you're one of the dedicated listeners for this show, first of all, thank you. Second, you are sharing with others, are you not? And you should be aware by now, we have many shows as part of Sci-Fi for Me Radio, our Marvel discussion on Level 117, the DC chat on the Rogues Gallery, Sci-Fi for Chicks talking about various topics, which we also do in mixed company on the Echo Chamber, and H2O, which is our one-on-one discussion between Mr. Harvey and myself, now syndicated over at Amazing Stories Magazine. Sci-Fi for Me Radio is more than one show, and we'd like to invite you to join us for all of it, or at least try it out and see what you think. And also check out Sci-Fi for Me TV. That's our YouTube channel where we have interviews, convention panel video, and weekend review where we deliver a digest of the news of the week. All part of giving you the most bang for your buck. Oh yeah, wait, no, it's free. So check it out. Sci-Fi for Me Radio and Sci-Fi for Me TV. All part of SciFiForMe.com, your portal to the science fiction multiverse.
We're now going to move into a promise that was not fulfilled, although it had some shiny moments. We have Fish returning to Gotham.
Wow. Good morning, child.
We ain't children. And it ain't morning.
Oh, it will be soon. A brand new day.
And right, I love how she's like this, almost like this conquering invader-y type thing. Yeah. You're coming in on the boat to the shore.
I conquered.
Yeah, with Kat going, whoa. And it was, if I hadn't known, and it makes me think that something did happen
behind the scenes.
Between Jada Pinkett Smith and the creators, the show, the network, whoever it was, that caused her to announce that she wasn't coming back. Because if I hadn't known that she wasn't coming back, this whole beginning, the whole episode would have been so much better Fish-wise, because Fish and Kat coming together was something I did not see coming. I did not expect. I wasn't planning on. We have cute little Kat who we've been canoeing all season long. Hashtag canoe.
Mm-hmm.
With Bruce. And she's been this cute little street kid with her, you know, tough. She's smart. She's savvy. She's, you know, thinking about things. She's got her goggles. She's got her leather jacket. And she meets Fish. And I'm wondering what's happening. And notice they did put 2 weeks later. Gotham writers, this is what you should have done with the ogre. Have something where you don't even have to show us time passage, but let us know that time is fast. Because it's now it's so much more, yeah, it's so much more believable. We're going to talk more about some of the other stuff. But when Fish surfaces, and you see Fish and you see Kat in this new stylized, the hair is different, the clothes are mm-hmm. different, the attitude is different. They're these two women that are now coming together. I was so excited, and then I went, oh yeah, that's right, Fish isn't going to be around next
week. Yeah, because that would be a subplot I would want to see. Because mm-hmm. out of all the characters, having Fish mentor Kat, because that's the vibe that I got after we saw that 2 weeks mm-hmm. later, that Fish was mentoring mm-hmm. Kat to become Fish 2.0 once Fish is ready to, you know, let go of the crown. And I was like, yes, oh my god, yes, give me this. Give me this dynamic duo of crime. And I gotta say, a complete sideline, when I saw this new stylized Kat, well, Selina, with her hair and everything, for the first time during the entire season, I felt like I was watching young Michelle Pfeiffer. Like, ooh, yeah. this is the girl who grows up to become Michelle Pfeiffer. And Catwoman at her most, you know, Batman Returns, I think it was. But yeah, I was watching young Michelle Pfeiffer and I was blown away by the changes, because we didn't even see the change happening. We got Cat before and Cat after.
Mm-hmm.
And I was okay with it because we had 2 weeks time that we didn't see where Fish could groom her and talk to her and mentor her. to become her lieutenant, basically. Because that's also the vibe that I got from the entire story. That Selina was Fish's lieutenant, you know? Right hand,
I totally saw her as... If you go back to Fish at the very beginning of the season, when Oswald Cobblepot was with her, before he was Penguin, when he's holding her umbrella and all that, and he was so wishy-washy that she treated him...
Wishy-washy.
Mm. Yeah. She still had Butch, and yet she had the need for an Oswald Cobblepot. I saw, the minute I saw Selina and Fish together, I thought of that and go, Selina could now be what Cobblepot was supposed to be for Fish, and she could still have Butch. Like, I could see this would have been a phenomenal trio to have together for a while Selina learns some of those ropes, while she transitions. I mean, we've already seen the start of it with her pushing Reg out the window and not being sorry for it. And her being with Fish, seeing this strong woman who is taking charge and who's doing what she needs to do to get to her goal, and having the backers that she does have with the doll maker prisoners that she's rescued and getting people back, having a plan and executing it, that to me was what Catwoman needed. And I was so excited to see it. And then I remembered, well, you get 2 weeks of training, kid, and that's it.
Yeah.
Because Fish is going away. And it really upsets me, because when we have that scene where Cat does come up and is, you know, Jim and Penguin and Falcone see her, when she looks at Jim and is like, yeah, chilling. You?
Hi, you.
Selina, what are you doing here?
Chilling. How about you?
Kind of jammed up.
Yeah. That's too bad. Oh. That's mime for help us out here. And totally blow the coolest gig ever. Just because we kinda, sorta know each other. Right?
Just the way she's acting. And the way she's acting towards Jim and these other guys. The way she's controlling. When they were hunting Jim and Falcone and Penguin, you know, who escaped, and they're going, Harv and Jim and Falcone. The way she acts, the way she commanded those other guys in Fish's army, I saw, like, that 2 weeks just really helped Selina blossom into the future Catwoman. And it's really sad that her training has to end this way, because I loved seeing the two of them together, and I wish we could have gotten Jada and Carmen together much sooner.
Yeah. In a way, I hope against hope, and as we know, hope is for losers, that out of all the possible plot lines and story arcs for season 2, one of them will include Selina becoming a leader of a little tiny group, maybe post-Fish goons, because they obeyed her. So, you know, there's already this little possibility of her keeping that control over them. And seeing her be in charge of her little gang in this now, you know, interregnum state of Gotham without a king, that would be something interesting. And normally I would say I can hope, but with this show I know it's pointless, because no matter what I want, they will no doubt mess it up. So I'm not even hoping for a good Cat storyline in season 2. Though out of all the female characters on the show, her character received the best treatment. It's not saying much.
Universally.
But out of all of them, she got the best storyline, best consistency across all episodes. So who knows, maybe they will do something with this new, confident, strong Selena, who knows she can be a leader. Maybe not of entire, you know, I don't think she even have the ambition of leading the entire city crime, but of her little gang, of her little neighborhood, she might be able to pull it off.
I think Kat is one of those that, I don't have to control everything, but I want to control what's in my, what's affecting me and what's around me.
Mm.
This, you know, kind of like a cat actually is. Cat doesn't really care about the territory that's way over there.
No.
Don't mess with my territory. Don't mess with me. You don't pet me unless I want you to pet me. You don't look at me if I don't want you to look at me. You know, very cat-like.
Yeah.
And so that's what I see.
If she claimed her territory, like, you know, say a little one city block, you know, three buildings, whatever. I don't know how big Gotham actually is. One district, maybe? I have no idea, but if she claimed her territory and had people who followed her and, you know, had this little enterprise, so to speak, she might be good at it. But then again, this is Gotham, people, so don't get your hopes up.
I see Kat more as not an organized person. I don't think she likes to be a little freer. I will say that jumping a little bit to the end, and we're going to get to how we get to the end there in a minute. Yes, fish goes over the side and into the water. She is a fish. Fish can swim. We didn't see a body.
Yes.
So I like that they did at least leave the door open. But the mini rant for this particular section is, why are you giving us something that looks so wonderful and strong and delicious as cat and fish together for a few moments of one episode and totally ruining it that we know it's not going to continue?
Yeah.
It just makes me that much more upset that it's not going to continue because it was so good. And I would have rather had more of that and less of Barbara and Lee.
Oh,
much more of that.
That's...
much less Barbara and Lee. So that was the rant light section.
I wonder why they couldn't work out something with Jada for season two, because, oh my god, yes, that would be delicious. But alas, you know, we can't have what we want.
So that was our rant light section. And I don't know how this last one's going to be. Because now let's move into Jim and Penguin and Butch and Falcone.
Everything
and
Maroney
with Fish and Harve and Loeb and pretty much all the everybody in Gotham that isn't Barbara and Lee and Ed and Miss Kringle and Bruce and Alfred. Pretty much everybody else is involved in this part. We start actually kind of nice and easy with Falcone coming down to docks, checking out some things, holding the little chick out of Sci-Fi for Chicks. Oh, he's being so nice.
Yeah,
pretty good that he was actually able to escape an RPG. I'm impressed with Falcone.
Hey.
And we have, it goes straight from that into the Gotham Police Department that, you know, they're arresting Maroney and all that. There's a line, this is one that I don't understand, that this cop salutes Jim, and Jim says, don't salute, it makes you look like a rube, and then he goes on throughout this episode to talk about he's finished in the city.
Officer Katz, right?
Yes, sir, Katz, Griffin.
Word of advice, Katz. I'm a dead duck around here. Brass are gonna fire me just as soon as this gang walk cools off, so don't salute me. Makes you look like a rube.
Alex, he just caught the ogre. Now, granted, he's dead, but I think killing a serial killer
kind of counts as case closed. Yeah.
Barbara's thought. It's a, yeah, case closed. You just caught a serial killer who's killed 11 women and then Barbara's parents, or at least complicit in Barbara's parents, plus held her captive. Why are you finished in the city?
Yeah,
I'm confused.
Another point on the lack of consistency list, because I was right there with you. What do you mean you're done? I could understand this conversation happening before they killed the ogre. Because before, mm-hmm. when Commissioner Loeb sent him after the serial killer in order to get rid of him, then I could buy that speech. But right
now... I could even almost say it after Essen said that whole thing that City Hall is switched and it's now on Maroni's side. And Jim has been kind of leaning more Falcone. I could even see the line after that, although still it doesn't quite make sense, but really? But
right now, Jim, in the logical universe that I would love Gotham to be, right now, Jim and Harvey, both of them, including, and some of that would also fall on Captain Essen, they would be riding incredibly good publicity. Because... Yeah. An episode ago, or episode and a half, if you want to go timeline-wise, he was talking to a crowd of reporters about the serial killer who's on the loose and killing, and he, Jim Gordon, is after him, and he will catch and neutralize him, and that serial killer should be on watch or should be careful because Jim is after him. Episode and a half later, Jim got him, Jim killed him. How on earth wouldn't this, that, you know, short period of time between the announcement that he is after the killer and he will catch him, and him actually neutralizing the killer, and you are trying to tell me that this wouldn't give him incredible publicity and everybody would be saying what an incredible cop Jim Gordon is, and he's like the union president or whatever it is that he is. He would be more safe in his job than ever, and Loeb might hate him and everybody else might hate him, but public pressure would mean that even if Loeb and everybody else hates Jim, Jim would still end up with a commendation and a medal and a nice photo op to satisfy the public.
Because even though Loeb basically sicked the ogre on Jim, for all intents and purposes, and it didn't work out, Loeb is still in this public political thing here. The optics of him being on Jim's side,
yeah,
and Jim being this cop hero is something that, even though Loeb could work behind the scenes to bring him down later, that moment, you cannot tell me the optics would not help him. So that it was one of those small little things that threw me off for everything Jim did in the next few scenes. Because why are you feeling that way? Why are you again the lone cop? You have Jim, you have Bullock, you have Essen, you have other cops saluting you because they're so impressed by you. You have the public behind you now. Why are you feeling like you were at the very beginning of the season when it was just you and nobody else? It threw me off because it's like, again, almost like, well, we need to get to the point where Jim is going to buck the system. The City Hall's gone over to Maroni now. It's no longer Falcone. And we don't have a nice little happy little Falcone situation anymore. Mm-hmm. And Jim is, the right thing is we have to save Falcone because Falcone is what's best for the city. That's your whole reasoning for why you're finished, is you've got to stick up for Falcone and go rescue him and be the lone one. Again, Harv is like, what are you doing? Harv, you went into Falcone's house ready to do guns a-blazing when Jim was foolishly trying to take him down. You're doing all this other stuff with him. Why is Harv suddenly against saving Falcone? Mm. And why are things... Again, it was like, let's figure out ways. We have Penguin and Butch coming to say their farewells to Falcone before Maroni's men come. And then Jim arresting them. And then the men coming for Falcone. And he was going to leave Penguin and Butch there. You can't because you arrested us. We're in your custody. Drat, you're right. Really? Really? This is what's on your mind now?
Yeah.
That Penguin and Butch are in my custody, so I have to save them. It's how do we get Falcone and Jim and Penguin and Butch and Harve all to where we need to get them later in the story? Did not make sense to me.
Here's a little tip for all the writers out there. Not even Gotham writers, but all the writers out there who are trying to tell their stories. If you can see an entire alternate universe through the holes in your storyline, it's a hint that something might not be right with the story you're trying to tell. Because the size of the plot holes in this episode are so incredibly big, you could put a whole elephant through them. And I was watching it, and there were, you know, nice little things that I absolutely loved, like Fish and Cat, like that little exchange between Cat and Jim. Like, why would I give up this really awesome gig for a guy who was nice to me on 3 occasions? Why? You know? I loved it. And there were literally, I could count scenes that I absolutely loved on one hand. Everything else was so absolutely flawed and lacked logic and consistency and was so out of character and weird that I couldn't enjoy the entire thing put together. Basically, it was Jim from the beginning of the season with Penguin, Fish, and Maroni from the end of the season, with Bullock from before this mid-season finale, and the cops from all over the place, and it was like mismatch, you know, putting things and not caring that the square peg will not go through a round hole.
Well, and you have two characters that we've liked throughout the season. You have Falcone and Jim, that both do flip-flops. I mean, they should be politicians with all the flip-flopping they're doing. And in this one episode, you have Jim saying, we have this whole exchange between him and Harve where while Jim's saying that Falcone's the best bad man we've got, and then Harve comes back, you're twisted about Barbara. Yeah, but I'm done in this town, so what do I have to lose? To him fighting for everything in the town. You have Falcone saying, yes, I can take control of Gotham again. Just give me 2 days to regroup. To him saying, yeah, I've had it. I'm retiring to the farm. It's in the same episode. I don't understand Falcone, and I've loved his character. Back when we were picking best baddie and all that, he was my first best baddie because
he was
awesome. And for him to flip-flop, yeah, I can get Gotham back together in 2 days. Yeah, never mind. I think I'm going to go retire downstate. And Jim going, hey, basically, can I come with you? No, I've got to clean up this town. I just didn't understand because there's not a sense of I'm doing this out of self-preservation. There's not a sense out of I'm doing this to save the ones I love. There's not a sense of this overwhelming duty to the police force, to the city, to other, it just, everything just keeps getting convoluted and mashed up. Now, I will say that scene with the shootout, that was a darn good shootout. with Jim and his, you know, against all of Maroni's men, ending up with him almost shooting
Harve,
which that would not be too good. And it had that great exchange with him and Jim and Loeb. You know, wrong place, wrong time. And Loeb doing that whole hope is for losers because Jim is saying, I hope this and I hope this for this town. Da, da, da. Hope is for losers. And that was the moment I think I most believed in this whole thing was that hope is for losers. Because I'm hoping against hope that this is going to make sense.
Yeah, but this episode, especially the main story arc, made no sense. No point at any point in time. It was so weird and out of character, basically. And I'm a fan. I should not have a better feeling of what a character would do than the writers of the show, for God's sake. No.
Well, they did get something right in Penguin and Butch coming to bring flowers to Falcone and Penguin spilling the beans, because that is something that all of the supervillains always do.
Talk.
Here, let me tell you what I did, and gloat, which buys enough time for something to go awry. So that is actually very true. what happens.
It was me, old friend. I did this to you. I started the war. From the day I met you, I was planning your end. I'm sorry it has to be in this squalid little corner, but say la vie.
Butch. Let's move into Butch for a minute here.
Yeah, that's another.
Because we love Butch. At the Drew Powell, we love you, Butch. So we have Butch showing up with Penguin. We see Butch eye pleading, you know, pleading with his eyes to Jim. Yeah, don't leave me and Penguin here for Maroni's men to come and take care of us. You have that moment when Butch first sees Fish again. I'm home. What did they do to you? And I believe that moment when he broke down, nothing good. What they did to me to make me into Penguin's sidekick, it was nothing good. And you saw that, you saw their relation, hints of their former relationship.
Everything that happened with Butch in this episode was what I was hoping to see from Barbara. Because this is how you do a character who's fighting off the torture, the trauma, and the brainwashing, trying to overcome it and not hurt somebody he loves. I could see the anguish, the pain, and all the terrible emotions that were going through him when he was pointing that gun at Fish and Penguin.
Shoot her, Butch!
Oh, really?
Do as I say, Butch! Shoot her!
What are you doing? Dump him!
My friend, remember your training. I order you to shoot him!
Ah! Butch! Don't listen to him! He did something to your mind! I'm your girl! Remember, I'm your girl!
Kill her now!
Butch.
Oh my God, what did I do? I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. I would never hurt you. I love you, Fish.
It's okay. It's not your fault. I love you too. You mess with your mind. It's not your fault. I'm gonna be fine. You know me.
It was a punch to the stomach, basically. Because it was so powerful and so emotional. And I was like, Butch, let me hug you. Let me make this all better. Because this, we knew that Victor Zsasz broke him. We knew it. We knew it at some level, no matter how put together he was and how well adjusted he appeared. We knew he was broken. And it all came to life in this episode.
And I will say it's the one time that the leak of Jada not coming back made me go, oh no, please don't. Because when he had the gun on both of them, don't let this be how Fish goes out, in that Butch kills her. I mean, it was the one moment that I was okay with knowing that Jada wasn't coming back, because it put that bit of fear in me. I like where he went with both. His loyalty, both loyalties, the brainwash loyalty and the original loyalty, in shooting both of them to injure but not to kill. Let's take him out. Although it did result in the whole final battle between Penguin and Fish, and her going over and him being king of the world. Oh, wait. Sorry, he's king of Gotham.
No, okay, king of the world. Yeah, Butch was the bright light at the end of the tunnel, basically. The bright spot mm-hmm. of all the things that were wrong. This one was so completely right and heartbreaking. And yeah, basically at Drew Powell, we love you. We love you. And that was amazing.
This whole thing actually is what also really made me upset that Fish is leaving.
Yeah.
Whether she's being written out or she's leaving or whatever happened, doesn't even matter anymore. Why Jade is not on it. She's not on it. Because all those scenes where Fish basically says, yeah, she's talked to Maroni. Maroni and I are working things out. I'm not on Falcone's team anymore. I'm not working with you. I'm working with Maroni. And then Maroni coming in all machismo with the babes. And you're my underboss. And her's like, I'm not an underboss. Oh, yeah, you're my putting her in her place. And you see Fish going, this isn't the deal. You're supposed to have your territory, and I'm supposed to have my territory, and we're equal. But she realizes that's not how Maroni's thinking. Maroni is totally wanting to be the Uber boss, yeah. And she's not in for it. Her shooting Maroni was an awesome moment.
Yeah, it was a completely WTF moment, but awesome.
We will whip this town like a rented mule. Right, babes? Oh, relax. I'm kidding you. Guys, stop, seriously. Don't call her babes or toots or what have you. It's a woman's lib thing.
Which I'm sad to see Maroni go, but it made sense. And it made me go, oh, that's the Fish I wanted. That's the Fish I wanted. I wanted her to be the boss. I wanted season two of Fish being the mob boss.
That was the moment when, if Jada was coming back for season two, that would be a perfect moment. Because she just killed Maroni, mm-hmm. and she is taking hold of the entire territory that he had under him. It would be mm-hmm. so nice and promising and delicious and... Yeah, that's not happening. Thank you very much.
Yeah, it was a big letdown. A really big... letdown. And it just, again, it just seemed like they were all trying to figure out how to get there. I don't understand how it felt so rushed, how they had to figure out how to get to different places when they had four episodes added to the season.
Yeah.
And it, did they do that to, hey, that means we can introduce more of these other future villains? Like, did we really need to introduce the Joker, if
so many
Cameron
times.
Monaghan is indeed the Joker, and I loved him as this future Joker, I think he's perfect for it, but did we need that episode? Could we have used it more to flesh out this whole ending and to do something more? It just seems like there's episodes I can go back now on and say, get rid of that episode and do something more for this, because that whole end scene with Jim and Falcone
also made no sense.
I'm going to miss Gotham, and Gotham needs you. Nah, Gotham needs a strong man. It's you. I know it in my bones. Here's the knife. It was your dad's. A knife is a good friend when you have no other. Dad was the most honest man Falcone had met, but he carried a knife. And I'm like, am I supposed to care?
Because
I don't care as much about that.
I don't even.
It's like that whole scene is supposed to be the companion to the Bruce and Lucius Fox scene.
Yeah, no.
And it's not. The Bruce and Lucius Fox scene is so much better than that. And I hate that because I like Jim and I like Falcone, but it just fell flat because it's like, oh, we're ending the season and we've got to let Jim know that he's a good man too and Gotham needs him.
Yeah, whatever.
That was your father's. He gave it to me a long time ago. The spur of the moment, birthday gift. I said no. Such a beautiful knife, and I have men with guns to protect me. He said, take it. A knife is a good friend when you have no other.
You were that close.
At one time. Point of the story, Jim. Your father was the most honest man I ever met. but he carried a knife.
Yeah, I think that's where we're kind of at, is I have these moments that I really love, and I'm really, we have a great affection for Butch.
We do.
At the Drupal. We really do, because he's just really such a great minor character. And I don't mean minor as in not important, but just, you know.
He's a minor character, yeah.
Yeah. We have Bruce and Alfred, who have really grown into, they're not just the kid and the butler.
Mm.
I see where their story is going. We have Kat, who is moved from the street kid to somebody I see being a major player. And then we have so many other things that make me go, yeah, I don't want to check back in next season.
Yeah.
And they're the things that I should be wanting to check back in. So I just don't know. You know, like, we're calling this episode Hope is for Losers. And I don't know if I want to have hope that season two will be better. Because does that mean that we are the losers?
Let's...
Well, everybody else thinks this season is fabulous. I keep reading things about how fabulous Gotham season one is. And I'm like,
Are we watching the same show? Yeah, exactly.
Plus, Jinx, you owe me a Coke.
Yeah. Historically, let's look at it like objectively. Historically, second seasons are always weaker than the first. There's always more stumbling about for some reason. I have no idea why. But there are not that many TV shows who you can honestly say that the second season was so much better than the first. So, what is going on? How are we supposed to believe that Gotham season 2 is going to be so much better than lackluster, somewhat disappointing season 1?
Well, here's where I will add the hope. In that a lot of times when you have a season one that is super strong, that's when the expectations, I think, are higher for season two. And if you looked at season two without season one, without the expectations, it'd probably be a really good season, but you have such a high bar set that it just doesn't meet that. Maybe for you and I, season two will actually
be an improvement,
exceed standards, because maybe they will have listened. Writers get the memo, as Alex would say, about some of our disappointments in great characters that you made fall flat. I'm going to stick up again for Erin Richards. I think she did a great job with what she was given, but what she was given was crap.
Yeah.
And it happens for a lot of characters. And something that Milo had said, and I quoted a couple episodes where, you know, they know how to write really great male characters.
They do.
They do know how to write great male characters, but they're even losing their way with how the story goes with those great male characters. Because Jim's story, even just looking at this one episode, keeps flip-flopping. And I'm hoping that maybe they'll have some time to see what they actually did with season one. Since we are getting a season two, they'll see what they actually did with season one.
And fix it.
And realize that they've now made this foundation. Let's build on the parts of the foundation that are strong and fix the part of the foundations that were weak and build a good second season. So my expectations for season two are actually pretty low.
Yeah.
Which makes my hope for season two, I think, a little better.
We'll see. We'll see, but I'll need really good spoilers, rumors, or pep talk from somebody, probably you, Heather, to actually tune in for season two and be willing to sacrifice an hour of my time each week.
Well, Gotham, here's something that we're going to throw back at you. Do some scenes like that Edmigma scene with Miss Kringle.
Yeah.
As teasers for season two. Figure out a way to tease us with some of that great building, because you've now set us up with all these other characters that have had a couple episodes. Let's just go like even to Harvey Dent. You've set us up with Nicholas D'Agosto, who I really enjoy as an actor, who I saw some really great moments as future Two-Face. Show us some of that stuff that maybe is happening on the side that leads into season two. Show us some stuff with Montoya and Allen, who have been conspicuous in their absence.
Mm.
Show us some stuff with Ivy. Little web sheet previews, sneak peeks. Something that gets us excited for season two. Show us some extra little things with Kat, Bruce, and Alfred. Just little tastes. 30 seconds, a minute, 2 minutes tops, that get us excited and know that you're actually thinking about this episode and not just going, okay, it's 9 o'clock in the writer's room, punch in. We've got to get to this point by the end of the episode. So let's just write and get there, because that's how I feel it is.
I don't know. I'm going to be skeptical and I'll see what
that's your
spoiler season brings me. We'll see.
That's your function in this partnership.
Yeah. You'll be optimistic.
I am the hope and you are the darkness.
Be hope and I'm going to be... Yeah, that's not going to happen.
Listeners, if you have made it to this point, I think we really do. Alex, you need to get on making those badges because you deserve a badge. A bat badge for making it through 4 rants and a breather. Because that is really what this was. And I really would love to hear what you guys are thinking of this season. Are Alex and I totally off? Did we miss something? Are we focusing on certain elements and missing other things? Please let us know. Again, Twitter at Sci-Fi for Chicks, Sci-Fi for Chicks at SciFiForMe.com for email. 573-427-2434 is the hotline. Go over to SciFiForMe.com. Check out what Jason's saying about the show and see if a DC person who just lives and breathes the DC universe as well as the Marvel universe, but you know, are we totally off? You know, let us know. We'd love to hear, and let us know if you want to hear us rant more. Silly people. Oh, that's so funny. Alex, thank you for going 22 episodes of Gotham. 22.
Yeah, and 22. What a ride it was.
I have earned my battle scars in this, and I hate it because there are certain moments that I just adore. And I'd like to watch season two and not just check out, okay, well, let me go online and just find those scenes with David and Alfred.
Yeah.
And Kat, you know, so here's hoping. Here's hoping.
We'll see.
Thank you to the actors, because I think you did do a good job with what you were given.
That's for sure.
I hope next season you're given better. Thanks a lot, Alex.
Thanks.
Thanks, listeners. Bye-bye.
This has been a presentation of SciFiForMe.com. Copyright 2015 by Flaming Dog Media, LLC. All rights reserved. No portion of this program may be retransmitted without the express written consent of Flaming Dog Media. This is Sci-Fi For Me Radio.